Blog Talk Radio.
Because of the lion shall break every chain. The conquering lion shall break every chain. Give him the victory. Again and again, again and again, give him the victory. Oh, the conquering lion shall break every chain. The conquering lion.
Y'all on with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Brother Drew.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Okay. We got the sister on with us today. 20-something years ago, she got a hold to a book that we was pushing everybody to get, and we just now, I guess, really teaching out of it. To the point that what we should have. Now, I had read this book many times, but I had kicked it to the side for about 4 or 5 years, and I was rambling through some stuff and picked it back up about 5 or 6 months ago, and it was one of the things that I want to talk on. After we had talked other knowledge, this is about the highest knowledge in the study. We've been studying Judaism for 2 years almost. Now, on this show, we are studying writing a new book, which would be a revelation. Revelation is the act of making known and revealing something. So we know that deceptive intelligence is what this cracker done gave us. So what we're doing is I'm sharing an in-depth study to prove to you by documentation beats bullshit ass conversation. That's our motto. That when we go back and research certain stuff, that this damn lie that this white boy been telling us and is incorrect. And we had to know that. And it ain't a damn thing that he told us and taught us that is correct. And you can't find a damn thing. If you do, you come bring to me what you say is correct that he teach in his school of thoughts. And I goddamn sure you are different that it's not, because it's not. Now, this word texagrammaton, we're going to be dealing with some heavy, this is the heaviest of the Masonic order of knowledge of secret societies that you could go off into right now, is what we're going to deal with. The word texagrammaton, it has 14 letters in it. And 1 and 4 is 5, so they put it up under the number 5, which is the power sign. In the Masonic order. Now, the definition of it is the mysterious and sacred Hebrew words of four consonants, translated Y, capital YHWH, capital YHVH, capital JHWH, capital JHVH, stand for the name of Yah. The vowel points Adonai, meaning Lord, and Elohim, meaning gods, that's more than one god, Elohim. El is one and Elohim is two, are designed, these consonants, to indicate that the pronouncing the word in text are one or less the sacred word of Yah. The name usually in English, translated into English, English-speaking people call it Yahweh, and it's no such thing. That's what they say it is. The word means Yahweh or Jehovah, and that's a, when we go back into the origin of the words, then that we know that that's not the true spelling of the word, because that's in another language that's been revised and put in another version. So when we go into the text realm, Grammaton, it deals with secret societies in its highest form, because it deals, the very root word, T-E-R, tetra, is a solid bound by four plane sides. The most common is the pyramid. This is mean that the connecting of these, which makes a pyramid, actually has four sides to it. Of course, you don't see the bottom, but you see the top, and it's all enclosed, meaning that it's same as a cypress, which is 360 degrees, but a pyramid degrees that you see is only 270, because it's three right angles that makes that, and 7 and 2 is 9 and 3 and 6 is 9, but you never count the bottom. That's the unseen down there. And the reason that this book was written and this knowledge was hid off into the Masonic order was that the word Yah, they didn't want nobody to know about that word Yah, because if you spoke the language at that day and period in time, if you spoke the language of Yah and you believed in Yah and Yah, you became with Yah one, that you had the knowledge of the black clouds, which would come kill your ass. And those people in that day and time, anybody that had that knowledge, you read about Moses and others, Yah would kill in their name and to a high degree. So the Jews didn't want anybody to say this name was too holy to be said at that day and time and period of when these writings first came. Let's look at what Judaism is. And white folks been lying to us that Christianity and Islam came out of Judaism. That's a goddamn lie. Ain't neither one of them religions came out of Judaism, because they entirely different from Judaism, Orthodox Judaism. We ain't talking about the the bullshit makes an anarch and a form of conservative and all of these fractures that done came out of Orthodox Judaism that is now these other five sects that's in existence as we speak today. We ain't talking about that. That's bullshit-ass Judaism, what they call reform-ass Judaism. We're going from the original. We ain't doing no damn reform in this lesson. So anybody that listening, we don't reform nothing. We telling it like it is. We start from the beginning, and that's the beginning. The sacred Hebrew writing begins with the Tanakh. The name Tanakh comes from the three divisions of the Jewish belief. Hebrew, Torah, means law. The Nineveh means prophet and can mean the writing. Using the first letters of each section to form the word Tanakh, these books was penned in Hebrew and Aramaic from the 16th century, from the 15th century to the 5th century before the Common Era. Jews believed that these was the writing under different and diminishing degrees of inspiration. Therefore, they put them in order for importance. And that's very important that you know why they put these writings in order was for the one simple reason that they didn't believe in these writings. These writings had gotten diminished to certain degrees. So they believed in what they call the oral form of the law from the Gentiles' point of view, and that's what your ass believed. They believe that the Tanakh is the most important of the Jewish writing. The Jews is different. Jews agree that the Talmud is the book that they go by. They go by the Talmud. This is they believe only that Yah gave the written law of the Torah and that Moses on the Mount, that Yah revealed these laws to him, which was 613 of them laws, and 6 and 1 and 3 is 10. That's Yah's number. Let you know what it was. And the Talmud is divided into the Mishnah and the German. They ain't nothing about what they say. We've been told that these people believed in. But when we go research it, we'll see that what the Christians and Gentiles done told us they believe in is totally different. Christianity came out of Hinduism, and Islam came out of an old Arab god named Humbo. Allah became Humbo after Muhammad, and we'll get today history sooner or later. But we know the truth because we study your damn history, and that's what we are doing. So the highest form that I found out when we were studying, Co and I, we Co brought to class from what Dr. Ben had taught him. He was one of Dr. Ben's students, was Hotima's book. And so we're going to turn you over to Sister, and she's going to teach you out of this book. So we turn it over to you, Sister.
Thank you, Brother. Peace and love to everyone. We're going to talk about, as Brother Dwyer said, we're going to discuss the Tetragrammaton today, or the tetragram and its meaning. We're coming from Hilton Hotima's book, and I have a little extra information that I want to add to what he has said. In the great mystic symbolic tetragram of the ancient masters, we have one of their deepest secrets. And there we find the elements which forms the basis of the most fraudulent book in all history of the world. That book, called the Word of God, was compiled by the trickiest set of men that ever united their labor in the art of deception. And no other book on earth has ever done so much harm to humanity as this book has done. In their prolonged study of the created phenomena, the masters discovered what they came to call the sacred four elements, as they found that these elements enter into the constitution of everything known. They saw for thousands of years that soil, solar heat, and air and water are the elements that produced every formation, every object, and every organism. The masters then invented an appropriate symbol to embrace the sacred four elements, and that symbol is known to us as the Sphinx, the image of which has been found in all the lands of the ancient world, and just as far back in the night of time, that is, as it is possible for us to go. And this is in one of Professor Hotima's book where you can read about the Sphinx. It's called The Mysterious Sphinx. In the history of magic, the great French mystic and Kabbalist Alphonse Louis Constant, who wrote under the pseudonym of Eliphas Levi, which a lot of us have probably heard about him, who was always on the verge of excommunication and even worse because of his flaunting of the papal authority, and who was called the last of the great magicians, mentioned the Sphinx as follows. The symbolic tetrad represented in the ancient mysteries are the four forms of the Sphinx: man, eagle, lion, and bull, correspond with the four elements of the universe, which is the proper order for the four elements of the universe is fire, then water, and then air, and then earth. And a little bit about the Sphinx is also a symbol of the invisible nature of man, and its symbolic wings represent man as a divine being, and the head represents man himself and the body of the beast. So man in his divine possibilities, he has divine possibilities to elevate himself, and therein is where the wings come in. There used to be a riddle in some of the cities in ancient times, and before you are allowed to enter the city, you had to be elevated. You had to be able to answer this riddle. And the riddle is, what animal in the morning goes on 4 feet, at noon 2, and in the evening on 3 feet? And what that represents is, 4 represents the ignorant man. Number 2 represents the evolving man. And number 3 represents the spiritual or divine being who has added the staff of wisdom, which is his 3rd feet, before he begins to fly. So these 4 zodiacal signs, with all their analogies, explain the one word of God hidden in all the sanctuaries of the ancient world. Moreover, the sacred word was never pronounced. It was always spelt and expressed in 4 words, which are sacred words, Yod, Hey, Bah, Hey. Of this word, Reps's unabridged dictionary says, the 4 consonants forming the Hebrew incommutable name of the Supreme Being, incommutable name of the Supreme Being, which in later Jewish tradition is not pronounced, as Brother Dwyer said, save with the vowels of Adonai and Elohim, so that the true pronunciation of J-H-V-H, J-H-W-H, YHVH or YHWH. Numerous attempts has been made to represent the supposed origin of the word, as and attempts have been like Jahweh, Yahweh, and so forth. And also a lot of nonsense about almost nothing. And badly mistaken are they who believe that the word represents the incommutable name of the Supreme Being, meaning the Church of God, of course. And that was known as a fact by the tricky biblical makers. But they knew that word, they knew that that word represents the 4 elements and objects, phenomena of quite different categories, between which the man and darkness sees nothing in common. The initiate saw the analogy between all objects and all phenomena and was convinced that the universe and everything in it are constructed and constituted according to the same law and the same design. This was the chief goal of the Kabbalistic philosophy. The concept is clear. If the word, the ineffable name, means it's too overwhelming to be expressed or described in words, the ineffable name, which represents the four elements, is in everything, then everything should be analogous, means like or resemblance to the whole. The atom should be analogous to the universe and all analogous to the word. The ineffable name, JHVH, the word that was with God and the word was God, says the Bible in John 1:1. This knowledge discloses how the Bible came to be called the word of God, but it is not exactly the word of God in the matter in which the deceived masses are taught to think of it. Confusion vanishes and mystery fades when we are presented with the background of the Church of God and the word of this God, which was very God himself. They're talking about a power, force, the elements. In the word which represented the sacred four elements, we have found only part of the hidden meaning of the mystic symbolic tetragram. That part which we have found is the external aspect which deals with the four elements, fire, air, water, and earth. And not only that, the fire, water, air, and earth, not only do they represent the tetragrammaton or the tetragram, those same elements are used to put the planets in order. Like certain planets, when organized, represent fire, like Aries, Sagittarius, and Leo, fire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have fire, water, air, and earth is represented by the planets. And each one of these names of the planet is symbolized by a combination of the tetragram. For example, Aries is IHVH, Leo would be IVHH. And so the alchemist and the Kabbalist use the combination of these letters just to represent the elements. And they said that certain, and it has to be true because the elements are present in all things, as we read earlier. And with that being said, we understand that certain combinations of the elements can help manifest life and form. And there's a story about the Golem man that was supposed to be the man that was supposed to be created out of clay to protect his people. And what they did is each person that has the power of that particular element would walk around this clay man and bring it to life. And not only that, there are 72 names, 72 possible combinations of this name that you can create. And if you come to the knowledge of how to create those names, then you are able to part the Red Sea. These formulas literally give access to the subatomic realm of nature. And the 72 names of the words are not names like Betty, Bill, or Barbara, but 72 sequences of energy that have extraordinary power to overcome the law of nature in all forms, including human nature. The sequence are conduits that transmit various energies of light into our physical world.
Sister, can I shoot in on you for a second now?
Yes, sir.
What Sister Arlene is, Sister Yasha Raya is talking about is that some good books to go get, look up on your internet thing now, Amazon, whatever y'all do. But the books is called The 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th Books of Moses. If you get these books, this knowledge is in this book. What she's talking about now is put in those books. Those books, get them before they snatch them off, because, you know, they'll snatch them away. But those books, see, Moses wrote more than five books, and they books are called the Lost Books of Moses. Ain't none lost. We done found the hell out of them. But understand all of these names that she's telling you about, and the power that these angels and all of this had at that day and time, that these people, Moses was known as the greatest hoodoo man, and hoodoo, I have to explain that later on. But we're only telling you the story of how these people, what these people believed in, and how they got their power and stuff, and how some stuff worked that you can tap into if you had the knowledge and you purify your body by the right dietary laws. If you restrict your food, gives you your power. These what we're talking about now is how these people had a certain power at that day and period in time, and in one but one reason they had it. The food. If you are raised on a certain food, raised a certain way with this food, then you possess these powers. Go ahead on, sister.
Also, and I wanted to tell you, too, that the information I found about the connection between the elements and the planet and the tetragram, it's in a book called The Power of the Word, Secret Codes of Creation. And it talks about the elements and the combinations of these words. So it's an interesting book. I don't have the name right now, but I don't even know if it's still available. So a greater mystery is connected with the internal phase of the symbol, which dealt with the astral aspect that rise as the product and of the function of these four elements in the created body of man. And when it starts talking about the astral elements, they're talking about a universal substance that exists just beyond our normal human perception. These products are another one of the great mysteries of the universe. They appear as astral qualities of vitality. When we start talking about vitality, we're talking about the vital force, power to live, our mental and physical vigor, and our energy. And it talks about our consciousness, and they have mind here. And number four, they have intelligence and attain their climax in man, the God of creation. We will analyze these constitutions. Most authors who write about universal mind and the cosmic consciousness are wandering in the wilderness. Mind is a term invented by science and has no concrete meaning. The distinction between mind and matter has been the focal point upon which scientists have erred from the beginning. They have argued pro and con regarding things in their visible aspect, their appearances, their modus operandi, and have neglected the more counterpart of the most important counterpart of these phenomena, vis-a-vis the invisible. Yet in the realm of the invisible resides the real essence of matter, not only, but of all that exists. As consciousness is another riddle to science. And this guy made this comment. His name was Harold Percival. He said, consciousness is the ultimate, the final reality. It is that by the presence of which all things are conscious. Mysteries of all mysteries, it is beyond comprehension. Without it, nothing can be conscious. No one can think. No being, no entity, no force, no unit could perform any function. Yet consciousness itself performs no function. It does not act in any way. It is a presence everywhere, and it is because of its presence that all things are consciousness. Consciousness is not a cause. It cannot be moved or used or in any way affected by anything. It does not increase nor diminish, expand, extend, contract, or change or vary in any way. Now, that's in a book called Thinking and Destiny. The consciousness about which this man writes is unknown to us. We have seen unconscious people and render a man unconscious with a blow on his head. There are people who are more conscious than others, and there are insane persons who are conscious about almost nothing. The evidence proved that consciousness rises as a function of the brain. So this man before was trying to say that consciousness doesn't move, expand, or contract, or it can't be changed. But the evidence proves that consciousness rises as a function of the brain. The higher is the degree of consciousness expressed by that person. All right. Much of the teaching of the ancient masters centered around man's state of consciousness. They asserted that man is what his consciousness is. Such thinking would constitute time and labor if all men possess the same degree of consciousness, or if consciousness does not increase or diminish. We have said that the four astral qualities expressed by the created body are connected with the internal phase of the tetragrammaton, the way these forces or these elements work within us. They are not entities but products, and they spring from a tree of life, a mystery of which Percival was not aware. The tree has its roots deep in the endocrine gland, and we talked about the endocrine system, what, 2 or 3 months ago, and its connection with the chakra system. So the tree has its roots deep in the endocrine gland. Its trunk is in the spinal cord, and its branches are the nervous system of the body, called the fiery man by Hotima in the book called The Flame Divine. And the ruling agency is the cranial brain, the throne of the Most High, the God spirit that dwells in the temple, as stated in the Bible. And in ancient times, sometimes the initiate would greet each other, and they would make the sign of the cross. And when they hit their head, touched their head to begin the cross, that was the throne of God, the crown. That was the heaven. And they would say, to thee belongs the kingdom, the glory, and the majesty throughout all generating cycles, making the sign of the cross. We are now dealing with astral man, as I said earlier, that's a substance beyond our perception, who is unknown to science and is referred to by science as the unknown reality. These being the exact words used by one of the truly great scientists of modern time, Dr. Alexis Carrel, who said, each man is made up of a procession of phantoms in the midst of which there strides an unknowable reality. Phantoms, we're made of different levels and frequencies of energy beyond the physical body. The first phantom would be the etheric body, which is kind of like a template of the body. Our knowledge of the human body is kind of dull and slow, according to him, and just basic. It is impossible for the present to grasp its constitution. So they've only just learned so much. They appear to be very, very knowledgeable, but that knowledge is only advanced so far. We must then be content with scientific observation of our organic and mental activities without any guide, march forward into the unknown. And that's in a book called Man the Unknown. Man the Unknown. Science and medical arts science and medical arts. Okay, science and medical arts can make little progress in the study of anthropology, biology, psychology, physiology, and pathology until the nature of the unknowable reality, the astro-tetragrammaton, has been determined. In fact, it is stupid and absurd to talk about progress until we know where we are, where we are going, and why, and really who we are. Marching forward into the unknown, as stated by Carrel, is a frank admission of facts to prove that science knows but little about man. The only science of man the world has ever had was developed by the Atlantean astrologers over a period of 50,000 years and destroyed by the church in the 4th, 5th, and 6th centuries to hide the true nature of man and the source of its own religious system. The sacred four elements, fire, air, water, and earth, are the joint creators, not of man, but only of his physical body. This is a point where science get lost and confused because they do not want to recognize the higher frequency bodies. Professor Hotema shows in the Glorious Resurrection that the ancient masters taught man is constituted of two bodies, and in the Bible they are termed terrestrial and celestial, and that's supposed to be in 1 Corinthians 15-40. But science only sneers that assertion and calls it heathenish superstition, while contemporaneously confessing that man is composed of a procession of phantoms, in the midst of which there strides an unknowable reality. Here we have an admission of science of the known existence of an element in man that is a mystery to science, and at the same time, science refuses to investigate the mystery and attempt to determine the constitution of the unknowable realities. The ways of science with respect to man are peculiar and puzzling. The evidence shows on its face that there must be a deep plot to keep man in darkness as to his true nature. There's a reason for this. If man's true nature was generally known, as shown by Professor Hotema in his work called The Soul Secret, it would mean the end of religion and medical arts and the end of the sweetest racket on earth. This means there will be no true science of man taught in the schools and colleges as long as religion and medical arts can prevent it. Our purpose here is to do the best we can in determining the true nature of the four astral qualities of man that constitutes our body, our reality. We have briefly referred to one of them as consciousness, and observe that it appears as a state of brain function. The same may be said of mind and intelligence, for these three qualities instantly vanish when a man is knocked unconscious. Some authorities assert that they are all just various phases of one state. The fourth quality, vitality, seems to be a somewhat different nature. The unconscious man knows nothing. His consciousness, mind, and intelligence are gone, but he still lives and breathes. This evidence indicates that vitality depends on some other part of the brain, and research shows that part to be the medulla oblongata. The medulla is the upper enlarged portion of the spinal cord, and we talked about all of these too when we had our endocrine system lesson, being the extension and prolongation of the cord into the cranium or skulls. In the substance of the medulla are situated the great ganglionic nerves, which control respiration and deglutition and vomiting, and that's just swallowing. Pressure on the medulla, and not simply strangulation, is held to be the actual cause of death in the process of judicial hanging. From the interior portion of the medulla and under the surface of the cerebrum rises the cranial nerve, and there are 12 cranial nerves that control various facial functions and muscles in the body, which emerge from the cranial cavity through opening in the base of the skull. These are distributed to various parts of the head and back, to the organs of special senses, and to some of the thoracic and the abdominal organs. That's the back and the abdomen. In the post original source of those certain nerves, which indirectly control the organs and functions of respiration. This is the throne of vitality of the body. Living is breathing, and living ends when breath stops. So when they start talking about spirit, when they start talking about mind and all of those things, they're actually just talking about the breath. It's the breath that causes man to be able to think and sense and feel. So they're just words used to express a function.
Sister Arlene.
Yes, sir.
I mean, Sister Yasharia.
Yasharia.
Yasharia. I'm going to say it in a minute. You brought up a hell of a question when we asked in one of my questions to ask the preacher is what did man need when he was created, according by the book, that was not within the kingdom? See, when the female, and we look at that story, the female and the male was created.
Yes,
he gave them everything. But that creation could not come into existence with one word. Ask that preacher with one word, what did this perfect creation that the Bible tell you about, the most powerful thing that you should know all about here on earth, and that was error. That's the answer to that, is error. The
yes,
kingdom,
sir.
The kingdom was already there with you, but in that kingdom, it did not have any error in that kingdom. And that means that you had to understand your body, your lung, and that's why it's so important that right now the most safest place where if you want to go get them, Hoteman went up in the mountains in Yemen where ain't no pollution, and that cold air, the higher you are, you get this body healing and rehealing. And this is a proven fact. You know, we might not have enough money to go do it or do what we're supposed to do, but in certain ways, Hotima said you can get that extra air with by getting you some isolating fans and breathing the air coming out of that and stay away from, get out of the cities where the pollution is. But the key is just what you finna start talking on is air. And I wanted to say that because we're going to have to continue this next week anyway. But what we are doing right now is we're going step by step of you understanding signs, symbols, and numbers of how this Bible was wrote. We're telling you what they taught, the ancient teaching versus this present-day teaching. And you can see, you should be able to reason and see which one is the better for you and which one was here first, and not this revised, reversion of bullshit we done got from this white boy. All right, sister.
Yes, sir. I wanted to comment on that statement you made about Hilton Hotima. Also, too, there are certain areas where if you can, well, I don't know about now because the air and everything is so polluted, but at one time, if you were able to find a high enough elevation where you could breathe the air where that was really saturated with the ions, and
the longer you were there
breathing these ions, you would begin to change. It would begin to feed you and nourish you. You would begin to lose your appetite and everything if you could find that particular area. It was a type of nourishment. So I understand how back in the day with all of the flora and fauna, how people could exist, especially in high elevations on just air.
Sister Yashira, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
When I was on the road, I always stayed at Rattoon, New Mexico. man, that's way high up. All that area up there, Denver, back when you get way up there in those towns, that's where you never smell air like that before in your life, and you can breathe so perfect. I mean, it's just simply amazing to experience that, but you can experience it here. But you had to know where it was. Now, Rattoon, they have no factories and all that stuff at Rattoon within 100 miles of it. You see all the stars, too. That's another thing. You see all of these stars that you see in the zodiac signs and stuff, you'll be able to recognize them in the sky in that area. And it's about 110 miles on that road of nothing but that scenery. I rode that route. So there is places here that you can go experience that.
Okay. And since we talked about mind and spirit, I want to say a little bit about that. In our dualistic way of thinking, sometimes we tend to separate mind, spirit, and matter, but actually they're basically the same because they're just different rates of vibration. And as I said earlier, our body being the lowest form of vibration, it's in its dense form, it's the lowest form of vibration. So what we are a solidified light. And like I've read about physics, and when you begin to delve deep into the subatomic realm of physics, then this reality, this illusion, you can kind of understand it, because around the atom is basically empty space, and you just see packets of energy. So life exists at various varying forms of vibrational rate. And so the illusion of solidity kind of melts away when you begin to examine particle physics. It's pretty interesting. I'm not a physicist. I didn't study that in school, but I've just read it in various books, and it's pretty interesting to me. Okay. So it's just all different rates of vibration. They're all the same, like the mind is activated by that energetic force that's present in the breath. Okay.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. You know, when we deal with that one word, air, I mean, if we look at, we ask ourselves questions, who, what, when, how, why, where, and air, when we get to the study of air, every living thing has to breathe in order to live. So that's number one down here while your ass is on earth. And then the next thing is your food. But it's a very important about the air. And we can see we can go back into the history, who messed that damn air up. Was it was not a black race of people. It was a goddamn white man that did this. So we ain't mad at him, because what we have to do is know what this cracker done did, and let him quit bullshitting us that he didn't do this. And according to the Jews, he said all of them was cursed, was an evil race of people. And the ancient Jews that wrote these ancient scrolls, that the Torah and Tanakh, they say this point blank about a Gentile, that don't go in the ways of the Gentiles, that the Gentiles were subhumans, and that these people wrote the history of these people that got us and conquered, and we speak in their language right now and calling ourselves them. And so you had to come out of their way. So the enlightened person has to write another book, a revelation of things. Revelation means you have to go to where stuff is revealed. So when we go study books like this, then we have a better understanding. And when we practice teaching this and share the knowledge with other people, you'll have a better understanding of understanding what these people done to you. Your mind had to realize that you've been hoodwinked, cable told, you've been genocided. You got to tell yourself, me and my children been genocided. What mom and dad had taught us ain't the truth. We think them, but it was a lie. because we can't live up under these conditions. You have to have a mind to do this. You have to have what Sister just told you, conscience. When you conscience, the mind has to be totally conscious, not halfway conscious. It has to be totally conscious of how everything is created. Then once you understand your body, then you will understand the universe. You will understand astrology. You will understand all of the other sciences, because you are the universe. If you are a being like that has melon, you are the universe, and you had to know that you are the mind of the universe. That's the mind that the universe has, is to come into this knowing or this knowledge. This is what the teaching of the ancients. So by reasoning, we didn't believe a damn thing about this knowledge, but by reasoning with this knowledge, we can understand that what the ancients said is still the best for us. That's the reason right now all the scientists now are saying, well, what the people in the Bible ate is the best food. The diet of the people in the Bible is the best food. Well, they scientists are saying that now. And we know that everything they said is true, but we had to be able to explain this to ourselves and to develop minds to have this concept. But you did a beautiful job on this, sister.
I'd like to make a comment, too. You said that everything in the universe has to breathe, and we all absolutely agree with that. Well, what's so interesting to me is even with the animal life and man itself, it's so interesting that the Creator has certain elements in the air. Although we breathe the same air, that certain elements or information in the air that activates our different functions. You know, we all
right.
But there's elements in the air that activate certain functions in us so that we know how to perform and how to exist in this illusion. And that's just so interesting.
And yes, in your DNA, if you what are you? Are you a June bug, a mosquito? Whatever you are, your DNA it'll make you breathe. That
absolutely
animal.
The breath activates that.
Right, just like right now, just
all of those.
Just like right now. This is they just called me and told me that the crop had started by well. I already knew on the 21st, the animals is going to start, like Mom's Mavis said, the bees is going to be beating, and the squirrels is going to be squirreling, and the ducks was going to be ducking. See, because nature, everything is going to start reproducing in nature. This is where everything, how they young. Most all animals have their young. There's some animals that breed, like the squirrel and the dog, and animals with paws. They have babies in the wintertime. They breed twice a year. But these animals that breed, they're gonna do what they're gonna do. Mother Nature is gonna do what she's gonna do. It's just that man, which was made higher in consciousness and thinking, was made higher. He ain't going to do what he was created to do. You wasn't created to do what you're doing, because you wouldn't be in the situation. All scientists, when we get through with this, it'll show you that you have no reason for your body not to live forever if you knew how to take care of it. And see, because perfection starts from within, and so when we understand where it starts from, then we'll start perfecting our body. But you have to will your mind to do this.
Right. You said you mentioned DNA, and if you don't mind, I'd like to comment on that too. That we're all guided by what we're supposed to do in existence by our DNA. And DNA kind of reminds me of the tetragrammaton, because DNA consists of four words, adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thiamine, I think. And it's just a combination of just those four words that create all these sentences and all these messages and speak this language to everything and informs them what they need to do after they receive that breath of life.
And another thing, it's just not DNA. And that was brought to me by a friend of mine, Brother Hindu, told me, say, Meet you done forgot what you taught. He said, you always talk about DNA. He said, but, you know, when you taught that class, it was DNA and RNA. You have to understand what RNA is, because when that stuff starts tripling up, and it's very important that when you study, you know the difference between both of these things, because it's very important for you to get conscience. And see, when the mind starts beginning, you start elevating and growing, and you start reasoning and seeing things. You become seer, you know, that because you understand how the mind works.
Mm-hmm.
The mind works in a certain way, and once you understand how to the mind is developed, and
right.
You understand everything.
2 minutes. Brother Walker.
Okay, so we'll continue this next week, Brother Drew. I'm enjoying this. Sister had this book for 18, 19 years, and sister's show teaching this book, and me and Cole didn't teach her, so somebody else taught her how to teach this book. 'Cause it wasn't me and Cole.
I kind of taught myself. With the guidance of the Creator.
So you did all of this studying and putting this stuff, lectures together, pulling out the important parts. You did a wonderful job on it. And till next week, we'll see us next week. I say Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shema Yahawada Ya Abinka Iya Kamariya Shabbat Shalom.
Ya Shalom.
All right. Come out of y'all.